Who would you say the most famous of Christian missionaries was? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I am Dave Thomas, your host. We are continuing with our discussions of mission, and today we begin a two-week episodes, or two separate episodes, on the life of Paul the Apostle, who I think is probably the most famous of Christian missionaries. He was originally known as Saul of Tarsus, and because he wrote so much, and some of it is hard to understand, and because of his many travels, more is known about Paul than I think any other first century Christian, at least missionary. His activities, I think, set a powerful example for Christian missions for coming generations, and I'm happy to have as conversation partners today Brant Berglund, a New Testament professor, and Paul Dibdall, a missiologist. So, gentlemen, what should we learn, what can we say about Paul, his background, and then his call to gospel work? Anything you want to, that we can pull out there?
Is he the most famous missionary? You asked that question
at the start. I think so. That's what I said. My argument would be, you want to debate that?
I would say Jesus, but if in terms of greatest
Paul, whenever
cross
you pull out Jesus, you trump everything. Yeah. Okay, so that's fine. I concede.
But I think in terms of cross-cultural distance and all that, yeah. I think we'd have to say Jesus. But yes, in the normal way, the usual sense of that word and that question. It's hard to find someone better than Paul.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
I can
Sorry,
see
that was a little diversion, perhaps.
I can see
but.
It. I can see it. I would like for us to talk a little bit about Paul's background and how that set him up to be an effective missionary. What were some of the points we could make about his origin, his background?
There are several places in the New Testament where Paul talks about his own background. He says that he was raised in a home with a Jewish background, even though he had Roman citizenship.
And now, how would that be the case?
He was born in a province, a Greco-Roman province, and yet to have family who was Jewish. And it's possible that his, you know, and like Timothy, to have a mother who's a Jew and a father who has Greco-Roman citizenship.
Okay, and so he acquired it. And that turned out to be a value to him later on. Yeah. What else about Saul before he becomes Paul?
He was trained in Jerusalem, grew up in Jerusalem, and trained under one of the highest-ranking rabbis of the time, Gamaliel, and was probably on the fast track to become a leading rabbi or Pharisee himself.
Was he married?
I was gonna talk about his occupation.
Well, go ahead.
He was a tent maker, and I think that is significant in his story as well. So he's educated, a scholar, but also is equipped to work with his hands, or at least with business, whether or not he did all of it himself. But he has a business sense and contacts scattered across a wide region. Yeah. So travel, business, all that stuff is part of who he is as well.
And so being a Jew raised in a Greek or Roman environment would make him conversant with two cultures, right? And what would his education produce? He calls himself quite proudly a Pharisee, and we tend to scorn Pharisees, but I think it's fair to say that in his day, Pharisees were considered to be very respectable people, and they were much admired for their intense devotion to religion, even down to the minutiae.
Right.
So that if
right.
you want to look for a serious practitioner of religion in Paul's day, you would have cited with some respect a Pharisee.
Right.
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 So how does this all play into his missional capacity?
The story in Acts of his calling, we see that the disciples felt there needed to be a 12th disciple, and they cast lots and they choose somebody, but you never hear about that person again in the book of Acts. It's Paul who begins to take the center stage at the death of Stephen. One of the last week we talked about Philip the deacon, and Stephen, one of his compatriots, Greek compatriots, who dies, and Saul is there holding the coats of those who are stoning Stephen.
Yeah. And by the way, I should have asked you here before we look at the missional Paul, Saul changing to Paul. What do you know about the personality of this man? You know, when you look at his writings, what kind of a person emerges? certainly a man of great passion. I mean, he seems to be very passionate in everything he does. He's either trying to wipe out all the Christians or trying to convert all the Gentiles.
We think of him as a great, you know, great speaker. We just kind of assume he would be. I think there are indications, even his own testimony from his own letters, that maybe he really wasn't a gifted orator,
yeah.
But that the effectiveness of his ministry was because of the presence of the Spirit working through him.
Yeah. I also see him as a man of initiative. He started a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't wait for things to happen. And so part of his effectiveness as a missionary was precisely the fact that he had initiative. He could envision what needed to be done, and then he went after it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some have called him arrogant, but I think he had a sense of confidence in his calling from God. He tells his church family on several occasions, imitate me, do what I do, act as I do. But then he qualifies it in a couple places, as I imitate Christ. Yeah. And so he actually sets himself up as far as he is a follower of Jesus to be imitated.
And he's brave. We kind of pick that up from what's already been said. But to be beaten and left for dead and to sort of dust yourself off and go right back again.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he did. Persecution drove him from place to place. But he was not one to back down in the face of danger. That wasn't him.
And it's one of the letters to the Corinthians, I think, where he has this long list of all the adversities he suffered. He's been shipwrecked multiple times. He's
beatings, imprisonments.
Left for dead,
robbed.
I'm somebody who likes to be on the water, and I'm intrigued by the fact that he spent a day and a night or more in the ocean floating.
In the open sea,
come on, people. And yet, he's like the Energizer Bunny. When he comes out of adversity, you point him in the right direction, he's off and proclaiming the gospel before you know it.
So in fact, his most joyful letter is that of Philippians when he's in prison.
Oh, yeah. So. And there's some irony there. I, a prisoner of the Lord, he says to the Ephesians, you know. So it's kind of a double meaning there. So I would say also he's a man of great perseverance, that once the issues were set in his mind, he persevered. I mean, even to the point of death, although it is kind of touching to read the letters to Timothy, and you can see that he has become a little bit disheartened, and especially in 2 Timothy where he says, I've already been to trial and nobody spoke for me, and he's kind of resigned to what he thinks is coming.
I'm already poured out like a drink offering.
Let's talk then. So that's kind of how Saul was. He was this passionate, well-educated guy, and then he has his Damascus Road experience, which is a very famous conversion story, and I'm intrigued by that because of its drama and its suddenness. And what do you think about conversions like that? Is that a good way to experience conversion?
I think it's true for some people that this is the way conversion comes. I think the problem is if we are all expecting to experience conversion in this same sort of dramatic way. And I know, Dave, I've heard you on a number of occasions talk about this issue in a way that I find very, very helpful. But we're not all converted with some dramatic some dramatic event.
Or even in an instant. And this is – Paul could say at the end of the day, I am now a servant of Christ. Other people can say it took time. It was over days.
You know, I like to juxtapose the conversion of Saul to Paul, from the against the conversion of John the fisherman to John the beloved.
Mm.
And I ask people, what do you know about the conversion of John? And nobody knows anything. Now, would you doubt that he was converted? I would not, because you see that he starts out as one of the sons of thunder, but he ends up as this old, very gentle, godly man who is so dangerous to the Roman Empire, they banish him on a little island, try to kill him, and God by miracle saves him, and so they get rid of him, see? They don't get rid of his influence. And so there's no question about the fact that he was converted, but it is true, as Paul alluded, that we tend to focus on the Apostle Paul-style conversions, thinking that that's a real conversion. But I would argue that there are at least as many, maybe even more, quiet, what I would call a quiet conversion, where a person slowly or gently comes to faith, but the effect of it is just as permanent. It's not as dramatic. But I sometimes worry about the dramatic conversions, because then you get dragged all over the country to tell your story, and you can even lose your faith while you tell your story because you don't have time for reflection anymore. I want to throw another question at you. What about Paul as the object of God's missional intentions? I mean, have you ever thought about that? Paul himself became a great missionary, but at one time he was, what do we say, missionized? Is that the right word, Paul? That he was the focal point of mission, and look at the outcome of that. And I wonder if there are any lessons for us to learn from that. How do you know that mission has been genuine and accomplished its purpose? I mean, look at the change that takes place in Paul, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, dramatic change. It sounds overly dramatic to say it, but in today's society, someone who is so zealous for their religion that they go out to harm other people, even to the point of death, approving the death of someone else on religious ground, we call those people terrorists. That's a terrorist that is
at the very least fanatics.
And that's what Paul is at the beginning of the book of Acts. He thinks he's serving God in doing this. So a dramatic change that takes place, God taking initiative and reaching out to him on the Damascus Road experience. And one of the things I appreciate about Saul, who becomes Paul, is it's kind of a similar trait to David in the Old Testament. It's like when it becomes clear to Paul that he's wrong, he seems able to acknowledge that with humility. And God, I think God can use a person like that.
And he seems to have been forever chagrined by the fact that he had done what he did, you know.
So. And yet for 3 days after his conversion, he doesn't eat or drink. And I have an idea he's going back through Torah. He's going back through the Old Testament and saying, how is it possible that Jesus is God, and then he puts it all together.
Yeah, and I am intrigued, and I appreciate that point, because it seems to me that all of his early education and his knowledge of the fine details of the Old Testament, as we would say it, set him up to become a very effective missionary. Not only is he bicultural in his life, in his living, but he now is very well informed of the religious context in which Jesus was set and the Bible is set, and he is now able to convey those things in very powerful ways that I think we will look at probably when we talk again next week. I do want to just notice here in closing that he says in one place, Romans 15:19, from Jerusalem and round about as Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Kind of a comprehensive picture, and preaching is a key component, and the gospel of Christ is a key component. Two of those that I think, in my opinion anyway, in missional terms, should always be front and center. And if you are doing mission, are you fully preaching the gospel of Christ, or are you doing something else? But we don't have time to talk about that here. So anyway, Paul and Brent, thank you again for some good conversation. My thanks to David Olson, our engineer, and our thanks to those of you who listen for the good word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.